Yeah, he's waiting for me.
We're going to call the meeting to order. The quorum is present. The first bill we have before us is HF 2794, Representative Powell. Are you here?
I'm going to do the minutes.
Okay, and we'll do the minutes.
I can move in for you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bigham moved the April 25th, 07 minutes. Any discussion on the minutes?
Mr. Chair, it's a little hard to hear you back there. You might want to focus.
Let me get this thing all lined up here. Any discussion on the April 25th minutes then? Okay. All in favor of the minutes, signify saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion does prevail. Is that the only minutes we had, isn't it? Okay. So now we have Representative Powell's House File 2794. Representative Powell, are you here?
Would you like to move the bill for us? Get it before you?
No, I do. Why don't you have Representative Cornish move your bill?
Okay, the chair will move the bill, bring it before us, and I suspect we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion. So, Representative Towers, to your bill 2794. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This will take, it will be pretty short. We went through this process last year, and we had a lot of opposition for the during the vote season, and this year I haven't received one email yet. I assume none of you guys have received one email yet. Essentially, this bill is just to expand to allow crossbows. If you want to shoot a bear or turkey with a crossbow, you can. Right now, you can take a bear with a bow, rifle, or shotgun. You can take a turkey with a shotgun and a bow. We're just adding crossbow to it. So, I don't have any testifier. I wish I had this bill or had this portion in my bill last year. I was sitting in my beer stand, and I wish I had a crossbow, so I said, why don't I put a bill in? So essentially, that's pretty much it.
Okay. Questions for Representative Powell? Is Colonel Hamm here? Does anybody know if he's here? I don't see him. Mr. Bogus, can you come up? I got a question for you.
Can I ask a procedural question?
Go ahead, Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you say we're holding this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill? And that I guess that would assume that we are having an omnibus bill? Easy for me to say. Okay. That was my only question. I answered it myself now that I can speak. Thanks.
That was a very good question, a very good answer.
I see my last one all year.
All right, Mr. Bogus, welcome to the committee. I was wondering if you could give us any light on the difficulties that you had last year with the crossbow use for deer. Colonel Hamm isn't here, so I can't ask him that question, but have you, through the department, experienced any difficulties, any complaints, anything that you are aware of?
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Ed Bogus, Deputy Director of Fish and Wildlife for DNR, and Mr. Chair, to refresh the committee's memory, last year the law was changed to allow crossbows as a legal method of take during the firearms deer season only, and because it was a legal method and not a separate sort of a license like the bill had at one point, We don't have a real good handle on how many people actually use crossbows during the season. We would have to do a survey of licensed hunters and ask that question. I'm not aware of any problems that developed last year during the firearm season when crossbows were allowed as a legal method to take during the firearm season, but we don't know how broadly they were used.
All right. Representative Powell, you have any further testimony or...
No, Mr. Chair and members, if this does pass, I might go buy a crossbow myself.
Okay. Anyone in the audience like to testify for or against the bill? Doesn't appear that there is any. Any questions from the members of the committee? Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, Representative Towell, I thought we had kind of an agreement last year about if we gave you that, then we're going to come back with a another bill, but I might be mistaken on that. I guess rather than wait to committee time, you heard my testimony last year. I still dislike the thing and the way it's progressed in other states to archery. It's started with sometimes veterans, sometimes the handicapped, then to firearms, and then finally getting into archery. And I'm just worried about the progression and, like Representative Powell said, the expansion. And so I'm hoping to kill it in the off season. So we aren't taking a vote, so I just wanted to express my displeasure. So thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right, we're going to hold the bill over. Thank you very much.
Did you tip my sign over?
No. Okay, now the next bill before us will be Representative Hansen's House File 2963. And we're going to hear this bill, hear the testifiers and anyone from the public for or against, and then hold this over for some possible further action. Representative Hansen, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for scheduling this at the first committee hearing. Just to give you a little background before I go into the bill, last year I had authored two bills. One was a resolution trying to encourage the federal government to take some action, and I didn't ask for a... We did pass that out and got to the general register. And then we had a second bill that was kind of modeled on the Michigan ballast water legislation. During the interim, I attended a conference in Michigan, a CSG conference, talked to some of our peer states, some other legislators, and heard a little more on the Michigan bill and kind of the desire and the need to work together as surrounding states. And so what you have in front of you as House File 2963 is modeled after Congressman Oberstar's bill. And my direction to the reviser was to look at Congressman Oberstar's bill, the federal bill that has not gone through yet but is moving through Congress to deal with ballast water. Last year, I think, in this committee, we heard viral hemorrhagic septicemia probably said for the first time, and it probably will not be the last time we say VHS. And I think that's the goal that we, the urgency that we need to look at when we're dealing with ballast water. I understand about laying this over during the last few hours. I've talked to very many people, and there's a lot of folks that are interested in this. I think we'll hear from them. I think there's an opportunity here to use 2963 to come to something where we can get action relating to ballast water and shipping. Since the bill was introduced on Thursday, the Pollution Control Agency introduced or has announced some rule writing. Rulemaking on ballast water that you'll hear from. I know they have some issues. I do have some technical corrections from the reviser that if we could maybe make those first.
Is that the A1 amendment?
That's the A1 amendment, and these are from the reviser to clarify. I believe they're not any policy. The reviser came to me to get these made. So
we don't have to vote on it, do we?
Do you have those?
Okay. Chair will move the A1 amendment for Representative Hansen. Is there anything else you'd like to say other than this is a technical? Okay. Any questions by the members? This is to get the bill in the shape the author wants it, essentially. So all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is amended. And to House File 2963 is amended. Further testimony, Representative Hansen.
Thank you. With the bill, it has, we walked through it on the first page. You have definite, and I don't know if you want to go line by line, but I'll just kind of hop through it a little bit.
I think we're going to have enough discussion on the bill that we'll understand it by the time it's before us.
So there's some definitions, ballast water management plan, ballast water uptake and discharge requirements, ballast water exchange requirements, ballast water treatment requirements. As I'm talking about requirements, you realize that this bill will have to make a number of stops in, I think, Representative Lagunas' Finance Committee, probably the Government Operations Committee, perhaps even the Commerce Committee, Civil Law. There's a sediment management, ballast water management, ballast water records book, examinations, compliance monitoring, consultation and cooperation, rapid response plan, and then an emergency plan to prevent the introduction of viral hemorrhagic septicemia, and ballast water management report. So this is a very substantial bill. I have three testifiers that I think can discuss the needs relating to VHS and some of the movement of VHS, and then I have Henry Van Offen from MCDA, and then Dave Zentner from Duluth, and I believe the Pollution Control Agency also wants to testify, and I'm sure there are others. So.
Okay. Well, I just want to clarify the reason for holding the bill up is holding the bill in here is so that I've heard over the weekend in 3 days, the phone has rang off the hook over the weekend. So I think there's some things that need to be resolved. And I know it has a lot of stops to make, but these things seem to be important that we get them started now and get a few little brush cleared out of the way. So if we can get the testifiers to start to come up and hear what some of the concerns are, and then you can zero in on, you know, some of their, see if you can accommodate them. If you can't, so we'll know whether you can or can't in the terms of the bill. First person, and you can stay right there if you want, Rick. Mr. Van Offen from the MCEA.
You didn't have these in your There's a set of slides, 5 pages stapled together there.
You for the record, if you'd introduce yourself and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Henry Van Offen. I'm the natural resource scientist for Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. I work out of an office in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. My background is that I am a fisheries biologist with a bachelor's degree from University of Minnesota and a master's degree from Cornell University in fisheries. Ballast water has been of interest to me for quite some time. It has been, as I'll go through this slideshow, which is really here to present some information and to me urge and express the need that we need to do something, that we need action on ballast water management. My graduate advisor was the Great Lakes Fishery Commission chairman for a number of years while I was in graduate school, and this issue 20 plus years ago was a hot topic, and it remains so today. I hope 20 years from now, actually I hope 5 years from now, we have moved much more so than we have in the last 20 years. So here's some background information on VHS. It's categorized by the USDA APHIS, which is the Plant and Animal Health Organization, an extremely serious pathogen of freshwater and saltwater fish. Unlike many diseases, it affects 28 different species, and there's a list of those there. We have other fish diseases in the Great Lakes. Often, they only affect one or two or are very selective. This VHS is not nearly as selective as many of the others. Just some pictures, and there's pictures in front of you on the poster. It, some press reports have called this the Ebola of fish viruses. It's a fish bleed out. It affects fish internally. Also this one, the skin is pulled back. You can see hemorrhaging there. And then on this one, this is a walleye that has both hemorrhaging on the outside and then a bulging eye. So it's not a friendly disease to fish. VHS, it's also a little bit different than many fish diseases. It is most lethal at cold temperatures, thus the concern with Lake Superior. It is also spread easily from fish to fish through contact between fish or fish with bodily fluids. It is, because of this and because of the USDA APHIS, there's been emergency orders, and bait fish industry and others throughout the Great Lakes region have been required to really enact some restrictive regulations. It's once established, we expect that the disease will persist in fish populations, and periodically there will be acute outbreaks of the disease. The strain that is of the virus that's in the Great Lakes is a unique and new strain, and according to Fish and Wildlife Service, it has probably had the had assistance to get around the lakes. Just a step back, we invest a lot in the fisheries in Minnesota, in both the St. Louis River estuary, which is a valuable fishery, just some facts for you if you need to look them up some point in time, and in Western Lake Superior. The state invests a lot of resources in fisheries management activities within Lake Superior, as do the provinces and other states within Wisconsin and Michigan. So there are some very rough numbers for potential VHS financial impacts. If we had a 1% kill in any given year of a variety of species, that would be about $210,000. A 10% kill of a variety of species would be in the $2 million range. That's a one-time outbreak. Very rough numbers. This is a map of the distribution of VHS, and that's also what's in front of you here. I'm not sure how good that's coming up on the screen. Good? Okay. It was first identified in Lake St. Clair, which is the yellow in the center, in 2003, which is near the Detroit area. It's also been observed in their area in 2005, 2006. The red dots are 2006 incidents that have been recorded, and the black dots are 2007. These are not all on the Great Lakes. It has moved through other means, which is why other states like New York and Wisconsin have enacted very restrictive regulations on movement of boats from the Great Lakes and also on the movement of bait across state lines. In fact, the regulations require all Minnesota bait fish industries, if they are trying to get bait into Wisconsin, to have their fish tested. So it's occurred. Lately, it has moved to Wisconsin in the Green Bay area. It's also been present in Lake Huron in a variety of fish species. This is from a report done in 1996 and confirmed in 2004. Ballast water discharge from ships is the primary source of non-indigenous invasive species in the Great Lakes, accounting for about 65% of those species that have been introduced. In Lake Superior, there are 32 non-native species, 17 of them are fish. 61% have arrived since 1960. Basically, we expect in the Great Lakes one new invasive species to successfully establish itself at least once a year. These are the unintentionally introduced fish in Lake Superior. Rough, four spines, couple sticklebacks, the gobies, white perch. Those are most likely to have come into Lake Superior from ballast water discharge. We're all very familiar with the sea lamprey from the canals. But, you know, these fish, especially the goby, are known to be carried in ballast water. They are also susceptible to VHS. This is some data presented recently. And this is the top ballast water receivers in the Great Lakes. And you'll note that the Duluth Superior port is the top receiver. The Two Harbors port is the second highest incidence where ballast water is discharged. And then there's a couple in Michigan, or three in Michigan, one in Ohio. And the authors here of this note that these ports are at the highest risk for introduced and spread of aquatic invasive species. And we need to monitor them. The donors, and this sort of goes back to the map, which I'll show you again, predominantly, again, Michigan, Detroit, Ontario, Indiana. There are lots of vessels that come into the Great Lakes. They are loaded with cargo. They actually do not always have ballast water on board, and this gets really sort of complicated, and we can't go into it here, I don't think. But they often get rid of cargo to the east, take on ballast water in those ports. The dots on your map, especially around Detroit, where we're seeing that VHS is there, and then they come to Lake Superior, and that at least some of those vessels. And the whole shipping industry is complicated. I'm sure someone who will maybe speak later will be able to tell you more about that. Here's a map of the ballast water sources. Again, a lot of it is coming from the east. And, you know, we have ocean-going vessels that enter Lake Superior, and we have vessels that are known as lakers. There's salties and there's lakers. And the 90% of the vessels that come into Lake Superior and discharge ballast are not saltwater vessels. And that gets us back to the map that much of this stuff has occurred first, where there are ballast water exchanges going on to the east, and it has not yet reached Lake Superior, as far as we know. Over the course of the last 30 plus years, there has been some, I'm saying, regulatory inaction, because in my view there hasn't been a lot of action. In the 80s, there were lots of voluntary best management practices proposed, both in the U.S. and by the International Maritime Organization. 1993 was the first time that there was mandatory ballast water exchange for ocean-going vessels. Those are the vessels that come from the ocean. If they have ballast, they are required to exchange the ballast in the middle of the ocean, so that salt water is introduced to the ballast tank. If they had carried any critters in there that were freshwater critters, presumably they're going to die in the salt water if it's exchanged. So those are called BOB or BOB vessels. There's also these no BOB vessels, which are not covered by current regulatory authorities nearly as much. We've had 30 years of meetings, reports, policy statements, and monitoring, and watched as one or two per year gets introduced into the Great Lakes. And we've also had some testing worldwide of ballast water treatment systems. There are several policies. National Invasive Species Act is the one that followed up, that gave the Coast Guard authority to help prevent introduction through ballast water discharge. It requires ballast water exchange for seagoing vessels. There's a Great Lakes Panel on Aquatic Species and policy statement, again, recommending, and there's probably been many of these policy statements recommending elimination of aquatic nuisance species through ballast water management practices. And, you know, there is some good stuff going on with ballast water technology. The Great Ships Initiative in Superior, Wisconsin is going to begin testing in 2008. And they've set up a lab there to basically mimic ballast water conditions to do treatment. Most recently, there was a paper by Drake and Lodge that kind of sums up the policy side of this for me. Despite policies requiring mid-ocean exchanges, non-indigenous species continue to be introduced to the Great Lakes through ballast water. The size of the potential invasive assemblages during 2000-2002 in their study was at least 17 more unique taxa that could have been introduced and taken hold in the Great Lakes, despite current measures. The DNR and the PCA gave a presentation in November, and, you know, they made the following points. They have a call for federal action. They want more communication and coordination, trying to develop regulatory programs for discharge, and, you know, there's the Great Ships Initiative being funded. That's good. And then project management. The DNR now, this year, has proposed the VHS Health Initiative, which is to help prevent the introduction of this disease and slow the spread if it's found in Minnesota. If you read the DNR's VHS Fish Health Initiative, I think the assumption there is it's going to be here, and then we'll deal with it, and we're going to restrict the heck out of bait dealers and fish movement and people moving boats around. There's not much real prevention of it getting it into Lake Superior. And as Representative Hansen alluded to, and the press release from Friday afternoon, or the letter from Friday afternoon from the PCA, is that they will begin to do permitting with regulations to follow. I don't think, you know, maybe we'll hear details on what they're thinking today, but I'm not aware of what the details of that are. NPDES permitting could range from some of their online permitting systems, where you fill in a form and meet the requirements, and you can get your permit. So I think it's the regulations to follow question that I have about this, and how soon there were going to be regulations. And I just have a few more. Emergency Isle Royale is one place where there has been action on VHS specifically. they have an emergency restriction that the discharge of untreated ballast water is prohibited within the boundary water, the boundaries of the park. Their order is there to protect the rare species that are around Isle Royale. And they have established that ballast water treatment is required, which part of this bill is suggesting in the emergency rulemaking part. And they are using actually bleach to dose their ballast water. They use chlorine bleach. It's introduced to the ballast tank via air vents on the top at 3 milligrams per liter for 200 minutes. They use vitamin C to neutralize that, and they have an MPDES permit to discharge their ballast water because of their treatment. Just for background, the water that we're drinking probably that has chlorine in it from a city system is 1 milligram per liter. So chlorine chlorine has been demonstrated to be effective in killing VHS and benchtop experiments. Just threw some numbers together based on what our assumptions of how much ballast water is being discharged at the Duluth port. If we assume the 3 milligrams per liter treatment and 150 grams per liter of vitamin C to neutralize it, total treatment cost of 3.8 billion gallons of ballast water would be about $522,000 per year. If we don't have real good numbers on how much ballast water is being dumped, necessarily none that I've seen written anywhere into Lake Superior, but if it's double that, then we're talking $1 million a year. There were 1,200 and some trips last year, so that's about $1,000 a vessel. There are other ports that require treatment in the world. These three, one in the UK, Chile. If you don't do deep water exchange, you have to bleach it for 24 hours, and also then Argentina whenever someone comes from a port that has cholera present.
I'm sorry, that has what?
Cholera.
Oh.
Yep. This is a worldwide issue. I mean, we know that. You know, the other alternatives that are out there are requiring open water ballast exchange for all vessels that enter Lake Superior, and then increased monitoring for VHS outbreaks in high-risk areas and prohibition of ballast water discharges from vessels that have come from those outbreak areas. I think there's lots of options out there. I know PCA has, I'm sure, discussed these. In conclusion, I just want to say, you know, VHS is a serious threat. I don't think anybody can really dispute that. We are fortunate it is not here yet. Some will say that because we already get so much ballast water and we don't have it, that it's not going to be a problem here. I totally disagree with that. We know it moves in fish. Fish are transported throughout the Great Lakes, not only by ocean-going vessels, but lakers. And it could certainly be introduced into Lake Superior through those means without treatment or some active measures. Just because we've dodged a bullet so far doesn't mean it isn't going to be here on the first ship that comes. We can immediately reduce the risk with treatment. We really have relied on voluntary efforts to try and reduce the risk of introducing these diseases. They haven't worked very well. The current and proposed federal regulations only apply to ocean-going vessels. We have a lot of traffic that is not ocean-going vessels. They are moving throughout the lakes to areas where there are things like VHS. And again, as I started off, it's been 30 years since we have recognized these sorts of problems. We need leadership and action to reduce the risk of introducing these things into Lake Superior. Because once they're there, we are not getting rid of them. Prevention is always better.
Any questions for the test fire?
Yeah.
Representative McNamara?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Oliphant, what percentage of the ships go into the ocean and what percentage of the ships stay within the Great Lakes?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I am not a shipping industry expert, but from what I've been reading about this, about 90% of the ships are not ocean-going vessels. I think I have a number from Duluth from last year. There were 1,231 visits in 07, only 138 were ocean-going vessels, so a little bit more than 10% last year.
And Mr. Odyard will be here in a bit. He runs the Duluth port, and he'll probably answer that as well. Any further questions? Okay, thank you very much. Next to testify will be one of my constituents, David Zentner. David, would you like to come forward? David is with the Isaac Walton League. Well known here at the Capitol.
Good afternoon, good evening. Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Dave Zentner, and I do live in Duluth, and I am one of David's constituents. And before I forget to comment on a couple of points that Henry made, if I may, one of the things I'm a layperson. I'm a businessman, retired citizen conservationist. I don't bring to you a scientific background. I love to hunt and fish, and I'm greatly concerned about the aquatic invasives impact, not only on Lake Superior and the St. Louis River estuary, but also beyond that. In my lifetime, most of our exotics have found their way beyond the point of receipt. And in a worst case scenario, we could see this getting into our inland system and having tremendous deleterious impact on our inland fisheries. But Henry talked about this is known, and now I'm going to try to sound scientific, and it's dangerous, but it's type 4B, small b. I'm talking about VHS, the thing I'm talking about. Found first in Europe, mostly as I understand it, associated with aquaculture system. Found one more place, I think, off the eastern North America. Found in our west coast. Now this virus in our eastern Great Lakes and coming west toward us. It, as Henry said, debilitates, kills a much broader range of fish species than anything we've seen today, operates at cool water temperatures. And what makes the fisheries biologist that I know and work with, as a conservationist, as a fisherman, very nervous at home, is that because of the temperatures, for example, when we have our walleye spawning run in the estuary of the St. Louis River, which drains into Lake Superior. That's the kind of water temperature we have when the crappies spawn and other species spawn in our system. Also, to piggyback on that, I'm told by these experts that fish are more resistive at higher water temperatures, more successful in recovering, resisting, surviving than they are in these 50 degree temperature regimes. So I wanted to mention that. I also wanted to touch, I don't have an exact figure for you, and I don't want to give you a figure that is fallacious at all to make my case, and others can correct me, but I have heard in recent days in our community that the ballast water discharge in the St. Louis River estuary or in our harbor may equal the discharge of the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District. Can you imagine the WSSD discharging in the billions of dollars, in the billions of gallons on an annual basis, untreated sewage into the Duluth Superior Harbor? Essentially, what's happened with ballast water is we have literally billions of dollars of untreated ballast water going into our estuary. Let me move on very quickly. I find H.R. 2963 a very positive step forward. I have some suggestions for strengthening it. As Henry mentioned, we are here because we've been over 30 decades of trying to deal with unintended consequences of a global economy and invasive species. In my early conservation life, and up to now, I wonder how many times we've gone to Congress and pleaded for help to control sea lamprey. Now, sea lamprey didn't arise via ballast water, but it's an example of what the unintended consequences are of unregulated introduction on indigenous systems. I think is not all of our invasives have been vis-a-vis ballast water, but we have to recognize that the damage of these unintended consequences to other industries, to municipalities, and to the recreational sporting industry, as well as the impact on our wildlife diversity, are significant. I want to make it clear that as a Duluth resident, I love our ship. I like to go down to Park Point on a summer night and see boats at anchor and see the lights out. I love to look in the horizon and to see our ships come. They add culturally to our city. They add economically to our city. We enjoy having it. In fact, Dave Helberg, a retired Seaway Port director in Duluth, likes to remind his friends and say, the ships don't come to see the tourists. The tourists come to see the ships. So this is not a rant against shipping and an attempt to shut down something that we value very much in our community and something that we need that provides transportation support, supports and maintains commerce and industry. We want these ships, however, to meet their responsibility. They're using a common resource. This common resource has to be sustained. We may not have perfect systems developed, but in the information that we have, we believe there are methodologies available, as Henry indicated, that are effective, that are economical, that are practical. And the time now is not for another 30 years of conferences, meetings, seminars, and research. The time is to move to protect this resource for all of us. As I indicated earlier, this is no different than demanding effective municipal and industrial point source treatment. We've been at that since the Clean Water Act of 1972. Some additional observations about HF 2963 on section 84D, I believe it is, subdivision 2, I think it's line 310 on the third page, there's a reference to adopting international marine standards, IMO standards. And we only, for the record, have a question. We assume that those are science-based standards, and we assume that they're based on Great Lakes fresh water, not on saltwater standards. On 84D19, we believe the goal should be 100%. In fact, we come back later on and make that comment that they should be 100% target goals. And the reason we feel that, 98% sounds pretty terrific, and it may seem unreasonable for Zentner to come before you and suggest it's not good enough. We need 100%. What I want to try to differentiate is my understanding as a layperson between treating an effluent of a chemical waste stream that comes from, say, the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District and a biological system. If we let 1 or 2 or 5% in a biological system survive, we're faced with the reoccurring recolonization, reemergence of exactly the threat that we attempted to treat. It may be difficult to get there, but I think that's where the marker should be, is at 100%. Under subdivision 5, under permissible discharge, we would suggest that we might strengthen this legislation by adding the language that the permissible discharge, the facility the permissible discharge goes to, must meet all standards and effectively detoxify the discharge of material. Subdivision 6, which has language about certain geographic routes, maybe something I don't understand correctly, but it seemed to be heavy in subjectivity. And I think that concludes my comments, Mr. Chairman and committee members, except to indicate to you that I represent today not only the Duluth chapter of the Isaac Walton League, the Minnesota division of the Isaac Walton League, but I sit on the Great Lakes Committee of the Isaac Walton League. And our membership, Mr. Chairman and committee members, from New York to Duluth, have as their number one objective, their focus, trying finally to adequately control and treat effectively the ballast water that has been so vexing to us for so long. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here.
And thank you. And questions? Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess a question would be, sitting on that board as you do, what kind of cooperation are you having with those other state members and are they looking with their legislatures to try and put this in play? To me, this looks like definitely a federal issue, but if that's not happening, we're the last on the food chain. It seems like that ship has to come up a lot of area before it gets to us. So what's happening upstream?
Very similar things are happening, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry, Representative
Simpson.
That's
fine.
My response is they're very cooperative. We have legislative proposals in other states such as Michigan. All of them are involved in their own legislative attention, either through administration or legislation. They're following, while this is not directly bearing on your question, they're all following very closely the Great Lakes Compact. They, like you and I, wish we had long time ago been successful with a level playing ground at the federal level that was effective, that would provide the kind of results that we need to protect our Great Lakes. But given the fact that the federal performance has been so pathetic, we're all initiating every action we can under the responsibilities and the rights that each of our states have. And we encourage more of it.
My only concern would be, it seems like the Port of Duluth is the end run for a lot of our mining and our timber and those operations. So whatever we do, I think we have to be careful that we don't spearhead that. And there's no question what you're trying to do has tremendous merit, and I think we need to do that. But I would certainly want to encourage a joint effort of the whole Great Lakes series, not just one to stand alone.
Absolutely agree with it, Mr. Chairman. The committee members absolutely agree with it. We had a conference in February of 07 when DHS was first described being in the Eastern Great Lakes, and we invited all of the neighboring states. We invited the port authorities, the seaway people, industry people, scientists. We met at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency offices in Duluth. We tried to interact. You know, the Isaac Walsley prides itself on bridge building, on reaching out, on doing community problem solving, and that's the way we've begun to respond to this. But we are very, very frustrated.
Further questions? Okay, one thing I'd like to add, that if you didn't know, members, that in the recent years, Mr. Ojar would probably tell you about this more than I can, but hardly a day or a week goes by that I don't see however long those blades are for the windmills coming up out of the harbor and headed out to all parts of the country, Canada, and so it's a pretty significant link. And one other thing I want to say about Mr. Zentner, when we have served on a number of committees together over the years, and I know his passion, and I know that he is serious about this, and I take very seriously, Dave, what your thoughts about this, and that's a very serious situation, and I think that we just need to try and get a few wrinkles ironed out here and then move it forward.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for coming today. I had the pleasure of being upside down on the highway today in my van, so I know the road you traveled.
Wow.
No, didn't hurt anything, just bent a little metal.
So
I tried to miss someone else, and I ended up, they drove out of sight, but I ended up on the top of the hood there. So anyway, well, thanks for coming down.
You're welcome. I'm off to my granddaughter's hockey game, and I'll stay in the cities overnight.
Okay, the next person is... What happened?
You're chair of the meeting, Mr. Chairman. That's impressive.
I didn't even get a bruise, Mr. Chair. It wasn't a bear again, was it?
No. No. All right, Mr. Bostic.
And Mr. Chair, well, Mr.
Go ahead,
coming forward, and just maybe to Representative Simpson, that the bill, I testified earlier that we had modeled this on Representative Oberstar's bill, and that there has been a Michigan bill introduced. I did go to a CSG meeting last summer and tried to talk with other legislators around and respond to that question about other states working. I want to clarify something I said earlier, though, that the bill is modeled after Representative Oberstar's bill, but there is a section at the end for emergency rulemaking, because the VHS threat can be very, I believe, is here right now. And so we may need to go beyond waiting for the federal government or looking at that and giving the authority to the PCA to react.
So, thank you.
Mr. Bostic.
Okay, Mr. Bostic, welcome. And state your name for the record. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Gary Bostic, Executive Director for the Minnesota Conservation Federation. I'm able to speak for Audubon, Minnesota as well. I lobby for them. They are in support of this legislation as well, as is the Minnesota, National Wildlife Federation. That is our national affiliate. Minnesota Conservation Federation is a state chapter of the National Wildlife Federation. Two things, and I'll be brief, Mr. Chairman. I know you want to get on to the other side. In our MEP, Minnesota Environmental Partnership, briefing book this year, there is an article to this issue. On page 26, written by Mr. Gary Bostic, Minnesota Conservation Federation. That's the only issue we nominated this year. That's how important it is for the Conservation Federation. We've got a lot of issues that are important, but this is by far the most important issue, the Conservation Federation. And these are guys that like to hunt and fish. And that's, I think Zettner said it very well. This is very important. Restoring the Great Lakes is the main goal of a program called Healing Our Waters. Great Lakes Coalition. There is a federal effort called the Great Lakes Collaborative Implementation Act, which is what our National Wildlife Federation and other national groups are working on. That's the legislation that Representative Overstar and others are working hard. We're proud of the fact that you passed the compact, the Great Lakes Compact last February, record time, first state to do so. That's a major step in the right direction to get all these eight states to work together. Congress, as well as two provinces out of Canada. So these are indeed international waters. So this is a very difficult problem, and we don't profess to have all the answers here in Minnesota, but we certainly have a lot of the leadership, and we commend you for showing that kind of leadership with the compact. It's a very similar analogy, if you will, to the clean cars legislation that you're considering. You know, we can wait for the federal government to do it, or we can take some leadership, like Schwarzenegger in California did. And at some point, you get a teeter-totter. You get enough states in the environmental leadership arena, federal government, you know, has to act. They will act. We expect the next administration, be it Republican or Democrat, will act a little faster on these types of issues in 09. But we have applaud Representative Hansen. The Senate companion is up for a hearing Wednesday, and we encourage you to look hard at it. I realize it needs some work, possibly. But there's nothing wrong with showing a little leadership here and forcing the Congress to move a little bit faster as well. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll stop there. And
questions from the members? Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Any questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Bostic. Okay, and then the next, Mr. Ojard from the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. I think he might have a handout. Did you have a handout?
No, I don't have a handout.
I'm sorry.
I did not come prepared to speak. I came prepared to listen.
Go ahead. Introduce yourself for the record. And
Adolf Ojard, Executive Director of the Duluth Seaway Port Authority.
Welcome.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments, if I may. First off, on the federal scene, we have been. I agree. This cries for a federal solution, and I think many in the federal government recognize that. Congressman Obasar has introduced legislation. In my latest conversations with him, he expects it to pass through the House by the end of February. The companion bill in the Senate is being. Challenged by Senator Boxer, and I don't know where that one stands. This happens to be an issue between the resolution of the issue as a standalone and the inclusion with the Clean Water Act. And we looking at the federal solution, look at the Great Lakes, the eight states, the two provinces, and can only imagine the chaos that would exist if every state had its own laws, had its own permits, and every ship was required to meet different standards to issue and receive, to be issued and receive permits for every port of call. And then after having
spent in excess of $500,000 to meet the standards of one state, only to find out that it doesn't meet the standards of another. In that condition, shipping would cease. You cannot expect owners, operators, to work in that environment. Now, having said that, I think there's unanimity, both nationally and internationally, for a solution to this problem. And there is impatience. There's impatience by the maritime community. Impatience, as we sit right here, sit today and see what's going on in Washington, in a failure to get a bill passed that we feel would establish the standards necessary to begin a process of identifying the technology to treat ballast water. I take exception with the comment that this is untreated sewage. That's quite an overstatement as to what ballast water is. It is not untreated sewage. I also agree with the author of this bill that this is a very, very substantial bill. And those were his words. Tremendous impact on the state of Minnesota, on the region, and on our bordering states. The Port of Duluth Superior is the 16th largest port in the United States, 47 million tons of cargo, over $2 billion, $2.5 billion worth of goods and services, and an economic impact to the region of $210 million plus 2,000 jobs. So what we do here is going to have a far-reaching impact on northern Minnesota and on Minnesota in general. And I think we have to take a very serious look at that. I might also say that we are more than happy to sit down and work with the author on this bill and better understand it. There are issues here I don't understand, and I would really welcome an opportunity to have clarity and to have input as well. The Michigan bill that has been touted and heard about for years now is a straw dog. It does nothing. Any ship that comes into Michigan discharges cargo. It takes on no ballast. They have permitted ships to receive a permit in Michigan. Why? Because they don't discharge ballast. And Michigan felt very confident that they could put in place a ballast bill that could be held up for the others. This is suicide with a bungee cord. It would have no economic impact on Michigan, and I think we need to understand that. The other thing is that the bill talks about technology. It's the wrong way to approach this. I think the approach here of standards, which is how the federal government and how the MPCA will approach it, is a far better means of dealing with the issue. Current conditions are we have ballast exchange. Now that's a ship coming in ballast. 10% of the ships come in a ballasted condition. Mid-ocean exchange means all of the ballast is exchanged and is done in an area of 200 meters of water where no life exists. Very minimal ocean life exists. So salt water is exchanged with salt water. Poses very little risk to our environment because there are no freshwater species. The other thing is in the NOBOB, which is no ballast on board condition, salt water is also being introduced in 200 meters of water and is being brought into the ballast tanks, several hundred tons, and it sloshes around in the tanks and it moves through the pumps and everything else. And the idea here is that it would then mix with any freshwater that exists, any freshwater organisms, and effectively kill any freshwater biology that would be in those tanks. The latest report from NOAA, which were done just this year, indicates that this is a highly effective means of dealing with ballast water. I'm not suggesting that this is the only means. I'm just saying that the protocol that is in place is highly effective, and we need to go beyond that, but we need to work in a very cooperative method in which we can see tangible results and develop the technology. The state of California just completed a report. We just heard about the state. They held up Arnold Schwarzenegger as having passed ballast water legislation. The report came back and said there is no technology that will satisfy the standards established by the state of California. And they have now had to adjust their timetables accordingly. So we're in this area, and I noticed the bill here doesn't provide for that, and that's, I find that to be a very serious issue. But having said that, we certainly would open up any opportunities to work work on that bill.
Representative Vinia.
Oh, thank you. I think we heard testimony earlier about the many years that this has been an issue without resolution. And it seems to me, just understanding how lobbying works and understanding the power of your industry, that if you had wanted a bill from the federal government, we would have had it years ago. Is there the will now to get it done, and how long will it take to get it done? That's my first question.
Mr. O'Jack.
There is the will. I testified last February before Congress and Oversight Committee, and along with many others. And I think the overriding issue there was we needed a federal bill, and we needed it as soon as possible. If we have the standards in place, the technology will follow to meet those standards. The industry is behind that. This is an international problem. We're seeing activities in Europe. We're also seeing activities in Singapore. These are ballast treatment facilities that are test facilities that are being developed. It is complex. It is technical. But there are systems out there right now being tested. Two of our biggest users of the Seaway, FedNav, has developed their own system called an Ocean Saver that they are testing right now. And CanforNav has put on an Alpha Laval system that they are testing as well on board ship. The Alpha Laval system has met, we are told, international standards. But again, there's a question here on the protocols as to how do you go through the process of testing those standards. Alpha Laval has not released any information that we could peer review.
Representative Virginia.
It's been many, many years, and then you testified a year ago. I mean, that scares me even more, because if there were true will to get something done, this is an industry that's big enough to get the job done. I mean, I know you have the lobbying power to get it done. So the fact that it hasn't been done tells me we need to do something in Minnesota to show that you're truly serious, because the impact here is so devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't get the seriousness of purpose if you're telling me you tested, we've had all these years, and you testified a year ago. This is an industry that's big enough and strong enough. If you wanted to get the job done, you could get it done in a couple months. That's what's so troubling here. So what is it that we need to do to get you to do your job? And that's why I think we have this bill here, because we're seeing, I mean, it's so easy to procrastinate.
Mr. O'Jack.
Understand. I can only speak to the last 5 years on the job, and I am not procrastinating on this issue.
5 years,
yes. It is not a simple issue. It is we cannot work it in a vacuum. We need the international community to buy on board onto this. We don't live by ourselves, and the state of Minnesota will not change world shipping. Now, that's my perspective. That's where I come from. I'm also chair of the American Great Lakes Ports Association. This is one of our biggest issues. In the last several years, we have brought this forward in Washington as an item that we want solved, because one of our number one items as well. It has only been with the election of the Democratic Congress, with Congress and Oversart moving into that position, that we've been able to get a voice of reason to move this forward. And as I say that, we are seeing opposition on the other side trying to block a ballast water only bill. And we feel it's imperative to move a ballast water only bill forward, get this thing done behind us, and then deal with some of the ancillary issues. But we are there's no procrastination. I have been active in this arena for several years. I'm also chair of the Great Ships Initiative. We have pulled together private public partnership, over $4.5 million. We've spent $1 million in Duluth Superior, building a state-of-the-art facility better than any facility in the world, according to our specialists that are working this project. And the idea here is to have a platform to test ballast treatment systems in fresh water, because there are no systems, or there are no treatment facilities to do that. So I share your concern. I share your frustration. I'm doing what I can. But it is a big issue. And I don't know. My personal opinion is the state of Minnesota won't really change this unless we need a federal bill. And I think we'll get it through the House. You know, how we get it through the Senate, I don't know.
If I could just... States can do remarkable things and force an industry. I mean, think of California clean car standards, for example. They will become our standards. I mean, that's a given. So a state, even a small state like Minnesota, can change huge law if we desire to do it. And the worry I have is we will see DHS, and for all those folks who are saying, oh, folks don't want to go fishing anymore. I mean, we're having trouble with encouraging people to go fishing now. And the yuck factor in DHS is so big that it pretty much wipes out our fishing industry.
Just a comment on DHS. The latest conference 2 weeks ago that I attended made two very significant statements. And that is, number one, it is a low degree of probability, in fact, very unlikely, that VHS was ever introduced into the Great Lakes with ballast water. Secondly, the spreading of VHS by ballast water is the least of all likely vectors. Now, that was the latest. That was from APHIS. And with that as a backdrop, I just add caution. Let's be careful here what we do. There is a lot of science. There's a lot. The press has a lot of press out there. The science hasn't come forward. When the person that made that report was challenged, why am I unaware of that? One of the people attending, he says, I don't write newspaper articles. I publish papers. In other words, it's not being reported. We are not the bad boy with VHS. I'm not saying it can't happen, but we are not the bad boy here. And to paint the industry and to go through hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars of retrofit, I mean, we're not talking $2 million to fix the industry. This is not a $2 million fix. The numbers that were thrown out here for chlorine do not work. That is a proven fact. We've run it through our facilities and all the best scientists we have. They have disregarded chlorine as a solution to ballast water treatment 10 years ago.
Everything we
have. Just a final comment. DHS is something we talk about because people understand it, but it's just a marker for all the other things we will get one a year or how many a year, and the next one could be worse than that. We have had things that are horribly bad. The next one could be worse. If you could say, well, I know which one we're going to bring in next, but you don't.
Was that a question or was that a
statement? No, it was just a comment because I didn't want to get distracted by DHS only. We get one new problem every year. So the problem for this year may not be a zebra mussel or VHS. It might be something different, and we don't know what that problem will be, and we don't know how it will affect our fisheries.
I just need one comment on that, and that is what is not said is we discover one a year.
Oh, maybe it's more.
We discover one a year, and trust me, we are looking really, really hard out there. And what is being introduced, we haven't a clue. But it's probably less than one a year because we've got hundreds of years we're going back and trying to identify what's indigenous, what is non-indigenous. And there have been, and there's plantings out there. I mean, we've been some of our own worst enemies, as we all understand. But I don't know that we are introducing anything near that. But we are discovering one a year, And that's down from one every 8 months. And we continue to look harder and harder.
Okay. Any questions by anyone else on the committee? Right. Thank you. You might want to stick around here. We might have some more questions for you ultimately. Okay. From the PCA, Mr. Egger, please. Welcome to the committee. If you'll state your name for the record and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul Egger, Assistant Commissioner with the Pollution Control Agency. Thank you very much for the opportunity to be here today. You've heard a lot of testimony about the importance and the great interest in this issue, and I assure you that the Pollution Control Agency shares that interest in this issue, and I'm happy to share with you a little bit about what we've been doing in the past and also what we're going to be doing moving forward over the next several months. I thought, Mr. Chairman, you mentioned a couple of items that you'd like to cover in this hearing, and one of the issues actually was brought up by Representative Simpson and others is the context for what's going on at the federal level, and I'd like to provide a little bit of that context for the committee that hasn't been covered by others. I'd also like to cover with for this committee a little bit about the actions that the agency is taking and the progress that we hope to be making over the next several months on the development of a state permitting strategy for ballast water discharges. And also, the last item, Mr. Chairman, that you mentioned is a discussion of some of the specific issues in the bill that we may have some ideas regarding or some of the ideas we shared with Representative Hansen as well, and issues that we certainly welcome the opportunity to work with the author and the committee on as the bill moves forward. Much of the discussion on federal action has centered around whether new legislation needs to be enacted, and that certainly could be the case, but there's also a pending date of September 30th of 2008 by which EPA is required by a federal court and district court in California to have a permit available for vessel discharges. So although EPA is appealing that decision, they are currently in the process of developing a permit and are planning to have that available by September 30th of this year. And just to provide a little bit of context on that litigation, the Clean Water Act was passed in 1972, and there's been an exclusion for ballast water discharges under the NPDES permitting system, and that issue has been challenged several times over the years, and in September of 2006, the court ruled that EPA's exemption for ballast water discharges couldn't stand under the Clean Water Act and directed EPA to provide a permit available by September 30th of this year. So that's kind of the time frame that we're working under. EPA has been working on this issue. I don't hesitate to tell you that we wish they would be a little bit more forthcoming in the information and the status of their work on this issue, but we've been told on numerous occasions that it is their goal to have the permit available on that date. Several speakers have identified the need to develop a national strategy, and the PCA couldn't agree more. We think that if there's ever an issue that calls out for a national strategy, it would be this particular issue where you have ships crossing not only state but international boundaries. Having said that, as we urge and promote a federal regulatory strategy, just the importance of this issue to our state, to our resources on Lake Superior, we feel that it is important to move ahead with a Minnesota approach, especially in light of the decision that came out of California. So we want to be prepared to implement either a national permit that EPA would develop, or we want to reserve the right to review that permit, determine if it's feasible, and if it's protective of the environment. And if we determine that that's not the case, we want to be prepared to implement a Minnesota permit on that date. So just to make it clear, our approach is to have a permit available by September 30th, 2008. One of the items that
we will need to move forward on in conjunction with that is Minnesota also has a rule, and Representative Hansen's bill addresses that in one of the sections, that has we have an exemption for ballast water discharges under the MPDS permit system that fairly closely mirrors the EPA exemption. And in light of the court decision and our desire to move forward with a regulatory strategy, we'll need to repeal that exemption. And again, our intent would be that that would be effective in the fall of this year, September 30th, 2008, in conjunction with the development of a permit. And at this time, I'd just like to point out, we provided a copy of a letter that went out last week that identified our public process for moving forward with the development of the permit, and also the announcement of a couple of public meetings. These will be the first public meetings as we develop a permit in this area, but we anticipate that we will have a draft permit available sometime later this spring for review and additional public comment. Mr. Chair, we also did provide to Representative Hansen, we didn't have much time to discuss the legislation today, but we highlighted a couple of issues that we would look forward to working with him on and this committee as the bill moves forward. And just a couple of general comments to begin. One is, the bill is currently drafted. It's drafted to Chapter 84D. And 84D is a chapter of law where the DNR is and let me back up, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to speak to comments that were assembled by both the Department of Natural Resources and the Pollution Control Agency. And if there are some additional comments or questions for the Department of Natural Resources, there are individuals here that could answer those. But back to the coding of the bill in Chapter 84D could present some regulatory confusion, since the Department of Natural Resources is charged in Minnesota Statutes 97A205 with enforcing Chapter 84D. And so what we would recommend is working with the author and the revisor's office or House Research to codify those portions of the bill pertaining to PCA responsibilities and authorities in Chapter 115 and retaining DNR responsibilities in 84D. It's really a clarification of who has roles and responsibilities in statute. One more general comment before just raising a few issues relative to specific sections in the bill. There are a variety of reports, a broader rulemaking than the agency is currently planning with regards to the current exemption in our rules for ballast water discharge permits, and some specific compliance determinations associated with the bill. And we're currently evaluating the feasibility of these different timelines, and we'd welcome the opportunity as the bill moves forward to, if we identify any problems with that we see with meeting any of those specific issue, timelines, that we could work with the legislature to make sure that we have appropriate dates that are feasible for us to meet. Moving into some specific comments going through the bill, in Section 2 under the ballast water management system, where there's a in Subdivision 3, the permit required subdivision, just want to note that the legislation requires permit coverage to start by January 1st, 2011. And just again to reiterate that all indications are that the EPA will have a permit by September 30th of this year. However, absent that, the state of Minnesota will be prepared to have a permit available by September 30th. And just to get a sense, I think it was touched on by one or more of the testifiers earlier, just to give you a sense of what does it mean to have a permit in place. We will be developing the permit over the next several months, and so we don't have a regulation for you to review as a committee at this time. That, again, is something that we're doing the technical review. We're going to be gathering public input and putting a draft out for public notice, but as envisioned, we project that a permit would require vessels in Lake Superior and associated harbors to in obtaining their NPDES or a state or any or some sort of a state permit, that it would include a requirement for general best management practices and specific performance standards for the discharges. For example, as we indicate in our letter announcing the process to move forward with developing the permit, this might mean that there will be the permit might specify an allowable number of living detectable organisms per cubic meter of water. And Representative Hansen's bill has a section that articulates some specific performance standards, and again, we'd welcome the opportunity to continue to review those and if necessary, provide some input if we find other information that may be helpful as the bill moves forward. Section 3, the ballast water uptake and discharge requirements. From our reading of it, it appears to prohibit the discharge of ballast water even from permitted vessels unless it's necessary to prevent significant property damage or to save human life. And just from our reading, it appears that it could be maybe a drafting error, or maybe we're misinterpreting. It seems like it's a section that was meant to provide relief in case of an emergency, and the way we read it, it doesn't necessarily accomplish what we think it was meant to accomplish. So again, we'd welcome working with Representative Hansen or House Research to make sure that the language accomplishes its intent. Section 4, the ballast water exchange requirements. As Representative Hansen mentioned, many of the portions of this bill mirror language in Representative Oberstar's House Resolution 2030, and that bill specifically exempts vessels operating within the Great Lakes, so it focuses on the salties. And so there are some language issues, and you may have addressed it actually in your technical amendment, that we would like to work with you to make sure the language is consistent and it actually is applicable to the situation we have in Lake Superior where we have lakers and salties. So there's just that's another general comment, Mr. Chair. The sections or the language that was adapted by the Oberstar bill may need a little bit of review to make sure that it's feasible to implement at the state level. Moving on, Mr. Chairman, Section 5, the ballast water treatment requirements. Again, as part of our ongoing permit development process, we are gathering information regarding the appropriate discharge standards for ballast water. And this is a section that I referenced a little bit earlier that discusses the requirements for the performance standards in Representative Hansen's bill. Again, we would just appreciate some additional discussion with the author and the supporters of the bill or people that have worked on the language. Just so we understand the basis for the performance standards and also the technological achievability and level of assurance, probably most importantly, that these standards would be effective in preventing the spread of aquatic invasive species. So we'd welcome that opportunity. Section 6, the design requirements. This will require the agency to establish vessel design and construction standards. And this is an area where the agency certainly does not have that expertise. And it also, in speaking with our attorney at the Attorney General's office, indicated that this could also present a federal preemption issue. There have been a couple of court cases, both at the Court of Appeals level and the Supreme Court, that have ruled that the federal government has occupied the field of vessel design, and which would prohibit the states from moving forward with implementing contradictory approaches to that. And so, again, we'd welcome working with Representative Hansen House Research to identify if this is in fact the intent of this section and whether that's actually feasible to implement. Mr. Chair, moving on to Section 9, the Subdivision 7, Detention of Vessels. In this subdivision, it would establish the authority for the MPCA to detain vessels if it is determined that the vessel is operating in violation of the proposed ballast water regulations. We really feel that the detaining of vessels is neither feasible nor necessary for the enforcement of the ballast water regulations in the bill, and we would welcome the opportunity to work with the legislature on some language that would accomplish the goal of prohibiting a ballast water discharge or operation in Minnesota waters a significant violation of the ballast water regulations that does not require the detaining of a vessel. Mr. Chairman, I can't even imagine how we might go about implementing something like that, but we'd certainly want to work with you to...
Lloyd, please. Come on, a retirement.
I would just maybe comment that I believe that the Ag Department may have that authority relating to grain and that, so I would encourage the Pollution Control Agency to look at existing authority that a sister agency may have relating to inspection on grain. There are grain inspectors, or there were grain inspectors at the Duluth Harbor that have some authority there. So I'm not sure I'm detained, but I would have to look.
Okay, well, Mr. Hager, I might have an answer to that problem as detaining. I'm a conservation officer I'm familiar with, and it's not Representative Cornish. But go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hanson. We'll check into that. Just a few more items I'd like to highlight for you, Mr. Chairman.
Just one minute. Representative Cornish, did you have a question to that point?
Well, yes.
Oh, Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, remember, that's what I was wondering, too, is that the mechanism where you did the grain inspection, I see that, but that, I imagine that would be done at the dock or somewhere where this would be different, the exchange of balance and where the violation actually occurs. And I can't imagine. I was thinking about the same thing. How are we going to accomplish that? Put a confiscation slip and a tow cable on that baby and tore in.
Like I said, I know a conservation officer would get assigned to that.
So that would be interesting to hear how we're going to enforce it, and then how many FTEs and how you're going to accomplish that, what fourth of PCA or state or, I mean.
Well, Representative Cornish, you might be able to bill out some of that mandatory overtime on that.
Hey,
here you go. Go ahead, Mr. Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just moving on, just a couple of more items in the bill. Just to address your question, Representative Cornish, Mr. Chairman, we're in the process of responding to a note for a request for a fiscal note, and so we'll be working through the identification of the requirements in this bill and the associated FTE and resources that would be necessary. So we're in the process of doing that, and the fiscal note is I believe by the 20th, so it'll be done in the next couple of days. And in Section 10, Consultation and Cooperation, Subdivision 1, the Great Lakes Panel on Aquatic Nuisance Species, this is a panel that is Minnesota is currently represented by the Department of Natural Resources, and DNR actually is in the process of designating the Pollution Control Agency as the alternate on that panel, but current alternate is the is Minnesota Sea Grant. And so, you know, we would encourage the deletion of this sentence or this subdivision and retain DNR as our primary representative and PCA as the alternate. Section 11, the Rapid Response Plan. This relates to the management of aquatic invasive species and is really the responsibility of the DNR. This is one of the sections in the bill that in reviewing the language, PCA and DNR felt that this would be an appropriate section to remain in 84D as opposed to many of the other sections that could be moved to Section 115 or Chapter 115. Just a couple of items on the Rapid Response Plan. In Subdivision 1, DNR has indicated that the plan calls for the establishment of a number of items that could have significant cost, and one example would be a state center to provide coordination for carrying out the plan, they'll identify equipment, et cetera. And though rapid response usually refers to new infestations, the language could be construed to apply to invasive species already present. And if there are any questions after I finish up on this particular section and somewhat on the next section, DNR staff is here and could respond to those specific questions. On Subdivision 2, however, this would require the Pollution Control Agency to effectively and immediately kill, contain, and remove invasive species in Lake Superior. This is an issue. It certainly sounds like a worthy goal, but we don't see that it is feasible to do. For many invasive species, there are not effective control measures, and eradication is not possible once they're introduced. And this is especially true for a large water body such as Lake Superior. So again, this is something that we'd want to make sure that we understand how the language is structured, and if there's a way that we could work on this to make sure that it actually is we're able to implement it and get the desired outcome. And the last section, Mr. Chairman, that I'd just like to touch on is Section 12. This is the requirement for an emergency plan to prevent introduction of the VHS virus. You heard quite a bit of testimony today about the importance of finding appropriate measures to slow and prevent the spread of this virus. And on that note, the Department of Natural Resources does have a draft VHS plan that addresses the non-ballast water vectors, and those would be the other pathways of introduction. Major elements of this plan include VHS surveillance on highest risk waters, including Lake Superior and the St. Louis River estuary, VHS sampling in all wild broodstock source populations used in DNR hatcheries, VHS surveillance plans for DNR rearing ponds. There's also the application for an APHIS grant to assist with VHS surveillance. DNR has received about $100,000 to date, and they're also going to be proposing some regulation changes. On the ballast water side of the equation for this issue, the MPCA has been working cooperatively with a number of our regulatory partners, such as the Coast Guard and U.S. and Canadian federal agencies, and also including the Environmental Protection Agency, VHS experts, the shipping industry, and the other Great Lakes states to develop an action plan to prevent the further spread of VHS in the Great Lakes ecosystem. This plan will be based on the latest VHS science, including risk factors associated with the spread of the disease. And the goal is to have an action plan that can be implemented by the time the sea locks are open for the beginning of the 2008 shipping season, which could be as soon as the end of March, around March 25th. Just a few items. The action plan will likely include a much improved communication system to ensure vessel operators know high-risk locations. And this would be a U.S. Coast Guard communication or notice to mariners. It would also include best management practices to reduce the risk of transferring the virus, and also possibly open ballast exchanges if fishery experts concur this would be beneficial. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to conclude by thanking Representative Hansen for the time he took to meet with us today. It was a very busy schedule. I know he was chairing committees and presenting bills, and we certainly appreciate his listening to some of the suggestions that we made here today, and commit to work with us over the next several weeks as this bill moves forward. And with that, conclude my remarks.
Okay, questions? Representative Virginius.
Yes. We talked about the California litigation. Have you participated with Amicus Briefs on that litigation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Virginius, the Minnesota Attorney General's Office, I believe, participated in that, but I have not personally participated in the drafting of the briefs, no. Is that your question?
No. It seems to me if that's the state's position, you should know and have participated in. That was done totally independently of your agency, and your agency did not do anything in support?
Greg.
Mr. Chairman, on the litigation front, Representative Virginius, no, we didn't participate in the drafting of those documents. I would refer you to the Attorney General's office if you'd like some information about their position on the matter.
No, I'm more interested in your position on the matter.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess another way to answer the question is to tell you our position is that we believe that it's absolutely critical that there's a permit in place on September 30th. EPA is currently appealing the decision in California. we, every opportunity we have, encourage EPA that despite their legal position, that they really do need to move forward and work with the states on the development of a regulatory strategy.
Suzanne Bagini.
So you have not, the PCA, even though you're talking about this, have not filed an amicus brief in the Court of Appeals on this matter?
Mr. Chairman, the Pollution Control Agency has not. That's correct.
Is there still the opportunity to do that?
Trager.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lugenius, I don't know. I would have to defer to our Attorney General staff on that matter.
Okay. Representative Simpson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of comments going back to what I indicated earlier. I think that this is certainly a federal issue, and I'm pleased to hear that Representative Oberstar is working diligently on it, and it sounds to me like he has got a direction. I think that with what the EPA has just given us here in Minnesota Pollution Control and the timetables they're working under, I think that this bill isn't quite ready for prime time, and if nothing happens in this calendar year, I would certainly hope Mr. Hansen would have it back next year fine-tuned a little bit. But it sounds to me like there are two pretty important players in play right now that need to work their way through before this gets on the agenda.
Okay, any further questions? If not, thank you very much. And anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? I see Mr. Meyer, are you coming down? Nope, okay. Anyone else like to testify for or against the bill? Now, we are going to lay the bill over, hold it here in the committee while they do some work on it and possibly come back and visit it again. No one else? Okay. That is all we have for tonight. We'll see you next Monday afternoon. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.